Chapter 5. Zara. The innkeeper and his wife are kind enough to secure extra supplies for the Wastelanders, including blankets, food, and excess articles of clothing, as well as dozens of pairs of shoes, generously donated by the local cobbler. They even insist that we invite our refugee friends to come stay in the inn, even though the two-story building doesn't have enough rooms to accommodate the former slaves. We politely decline, but ask if the town's blacksmith is still around to help us with removing the slave collars off the Wastelanders. Mrs. Ellis says that he is, and that he'd be more than willing to help us.
I'll ask him myself. Old Edgar owes me and my husband a few favors, you see. He'll be there to help your friends first thing in the morning.
After thanking her profusely and saying our goodbyes, we saddle a pack mule and make our way back to the camp for another cold night spent outdoors.
We should have just stayed at the inn, Owen says, as we make for the field where the others are staying. We could both do the good night's sleep in an actual bed.
That wouldn't be the right thing to do, I chide gently. If not for them, we probably would have perished in the wastes. We can't abandon them now for a little comfort.
I know, Owen replies glumly, but I still feel like complaining.
Never thought I'd see the day that a mage would have a better attitude than a ranger's apprentice about sleeping outside. I smile wryly at him. You're growing soft, Owen Lund.
He gives me a flat look. Just because I'm a ranger's apprentice doesn't mean I don't like a little comfort now and again. Besides, weren't you the one complaining earlier about wanting to take a bath?
I shrug. That was before. We haven't the time to relax before the sun sets, and these supplies aren't going to deliver themselves.
He grunts. I suppose you're right.
There will be plenty of time to bathe and primp when we get to Tarsus, I go on, turning my attention to the sloping road ahead. For now, we need to get everyone outfitted and rested for the remainder of our journey. We still have a long road ahead of us. When we arrive, we find ourselves surrounded by the young Wastelander guards, their faces relieved upon finally seeing us, especially Yari's. They fall into line behind us, chattering softly about the strangeness of this new land. We begin passing out the supplies, handing blankets and packages of food to the men and women of the camp. They eye the mule warily, as if unsure whether the beast will prove friend or foe.
I remember feeling much the same way once upon a time, I think, patting the placid animal fondly on the nose.
After all the goods have been distributed, Kari approaches me, the black-haired maiden now bundled up in a scratchy brown blanket.
"We were worried," she says softly. "Why were you gone for so long?"
I walk with her to one of the many cook fires blazing in the middle of camp. "We found friends," I explain, speaking to the innkeeper's hospitality. "They were kind enough to give us these supplies." Already many of the Wastelanders are tearing into the food, marveling at the softness of the bread and the sweetness of the fruit. "There's one more thing," I say, pointing to Kari's collar. "We found someone to help remove these." Her hand strays to her neck.
"Remove?"
"Yes," I reply. "You're free now. The demons can no longer claim you as their own."
Kari frowns, as if uncertain about what to think. "This is good?"
"Yes."
"It is,"
I say, reassuring her. She hesitates, looks around, then takes a step closer to me. Quietly she asks,
"What will we do now? Where will we go?"
I study her in the firelight, noting the fear in her dark eyes. She must feel the same way as everyone else here, half frozen and unsure about the road ahead. I realize that they're all in desperate need of some guidance, a friendly voice to explain what's happening.
We've been so intent on leaving the wastes that we've barely taken the time to talk to them about it. Some leaders we are.
We're going to Tarsus, I reply, speaking loudly enough for the others around me to hear.
I can sense them inching closer, hanging upon my words.
It's a large camp, larger than any you've ever seen, with much food and many resources. Its buildings are tall and made from stone. Your people will be safe there, I promise.
She eyes me for a moment, then glances away, her voice dropping to a low whisper.
And the demons?
We'll fight them, I reply simply, before turning to address the crowd. This is our quest, to fight and defeat the demons, and to protect our families and our homes. It will be difficult, and we will not force any of you to fight if you don't wish to. However, I won't lie to you. If we're going to win, we will need every man, woman, and child to help us.
How can we hope to defeat the demons? A man asks. They're unstoppable.
Many mutter in agreement. I consider his question, trying to come up with an honest answer.
I cannot promise that we will be victorious. Many people will probably die before the end. But we have one thing that the demons don't, a cause worth fighting for. It's like a fire that casts away the darkness, giving us the strength to press on.
I'm not sure about the grammar, but my speech seems to have the desired effect. The people listening hold their heads a little higher, their expressions less worried than before. I decide to follow up with a quote from the Church of Light.
Even the smallest candle can illuminate the darkest of nights. Let us be a light to the world and not give in to the darkness. Let us be strong.
The translation isn't perfect, but I notice several nodding to my words, the Wastelanders contemplating them with an air of resolve, rather than uncertainty. Quiet conversations begin anew, and I bid Kari good night, making my way over to where Owen crouches on the opposite side of the fire pit.
That was a nice speech, he says. I have no idea what you just said, but they seemed to like it.
I merely told them what they needed to hear, I reply, plucking a strip of salted venison from a nearby basket. They were just looking for a little encouragement, that's all.
Musingly, Owen replies,
We all need that, once in a while.
Together we eat the food given to us by the Ellises, conversing little as the cold of the night sets in. It's simple fare, but delicious. A welcome respite from the food we'd brought with us from the wastes. Within the hour, I bid Owen good night and head to my tent, eager for some sleep. The mat and blankets from the inn are a far cry from the silk sheets and downy pillows of the conclave, but they'll suffice for now. In just a few short days, we'll finally reach the City of Mages. First thing in the morning, we break down camp and wait for the blacksmith to show. Unable to tarry any longer, we finish our morning meal and make our way back through the woods to Forest Hill. The weather seems much milder than the past 2 days, the air considerably warmer, and the ground less icy. In fact, the snow seems to have melted altogether, leaving behind a morass of slushy mud. The climate's already changing, I think, as we trudge toward the town. Before we know it, this whole kingdom will be just like the wastes. When we arrive at the base of the hill, the remaining population has gathered together, preparing themselves for departure. We instantly pick out the innkeeper and his wife, packing up a heavy-laden wagon. Owen and I jog over to inquire about the blacksmith.
He'll be around here somewhere. It may take some convincing, but he'll do it. Rest assured. Find him tonight when we make camp. I've already spoken to him, Mrs. Ellis reassures us. And Owen.
She looks at him as a mother would her own child.
Yes?
keep safe.
Yes, Mrs. Ellis. You too.
She squeezes his arm and gives me a quick hug. Mr. Ellis, who I've never seen to be one for many words, shakes Owen's hand before we make our way back to the Wastelanders. We find the governor at the forefront of the group, sitting astride a fine-looking black horse. His eyes have dark circles beneath them, and his posture is stooped, but his clothing is rich and fine as ever, with an embroidered cloak draping the back of his mount. The Wastelanders have come to a stop before the congregation, and many give us odd looks. The appearance of the Wastelanders marks them clearly as foreigners. Whispers already begin to permeate the crowd as we approach Governor Pryor.
"Good morning, Governor,"
Owen calls, his tone causing the bald man to wince.
"You're looking well rested today."
"Ah, Apprentice Lund, Magus, you've arrived," he replies,
offering a wan smile that looks more like a grimace.
"Good. That means we can depart."
"Indeed," I say, pulling my robes more tightly around myself. As you can see, we don't have any mounts, so the going may be a little slower than usual. Don't let that fool you, though. We're a hardy bunch, and we've already traveled far. The governor's eyes widen when he sees the Wastelanders.
"Who are these people, Magus?"
"It's sort of complicated," I reply. "I'd be happy to tell you all about them on the road." He nods slowly, his expression troubled as he turns to address the citizens of Forest Hill.
"All right, then. It's time we left. Every second we waste puts us closer to danger. Off we go."
With that, he kicks his heels into his horse, urging the beast forward with a click of his tongue. The great caravan follows him, traveling along the southeastern road toward the heartlands. The townspeople and the Wastelanders remain separate as we go, shooting distrustful glances at each other and murmuring quietly to their neighbors. The day drags on, the temperature rising ever so slightly as the sky brightens. When it comes time to camp, the two groups set up their tents in distinct clusters, a wide swath of earth separating them. Owen and I spend time in both camps, mingling with those we recognize from our time in Forest Hill, but ultimately staying in the tents provided by the Wastelanders. After supper, we find the blacksmith, Edgar, who agrees to help us in removing the slave collars, though not without a fair bit of grumbling. Using a hammer and what looks like a small chisel, he sets to work removing the hinge pins, and sure enough, the collars easily fall away. Surprisingly, many of the Wastelanders seem indifferent to having their collars removed, their expressions distant as they regard the thick metal circles. Kari, however, has tears in her eyes when she's freed, a look of profound relief washing over her. Yari and the youths have similar reactions. "Freedom is a beautiful thing," I think, tearfully embracing Kari like a sister. "Not everyone appreciates it, though, I suppose." On the second day we make it to the Heartlands, our long train marching through the vast, rolling farmlands. The fields, once so green and vibrant, are now drab and washed out, the grass flattened and yellowed like straw. The dark clouds have caught up with us, though no thunder rumbles and no rain falls, a dry warm wind blowing in from the west. The weather feels unnatural, the grasp of winter loosening now that the Ark is no more. Owen and I walk side by side on the road, chatting amiably about what we'll do once we reach Tarsus. We laugh, forgetting for a time the strange black clouds and the looming threat of war. We exchange stories from our childhood, recalling memories both fun and embarrassing. It's good to laugh again, I think, grinning like a fool despite the strange looks I receive from the others. We never thought we'd make it back into the kingdom after our exile. Every day we have together is a blessing. During one of his stories,
Owen stops mid-sentence and cocks his head to the side.
"What is it?"
I ask, suddenly nervous.
"What do you hear?"
"Dark hounds," Owen replies, pulling his knife from his belt. "I need to get Yari and the others."
He runs away before I can question him further, the caravan continuing to plod along as usual. My hand drifts to the talisman dangling from my neck, and then after a moment, I hear the sound as well. Distant howling.
"Light almighty,"
I swear under my breath, dashing off in the direction Owen had run off. Traditionally, the R'hllar used dark hounds as runners to go ahead of their armies, the beasts rooting out scouts and sowing terror.
The Prince of Darkness must already be advancing.
Near the trailing end of our caravan, I find Owen marshalling a small force of spear-wielding youths, along with a handful of farmers and hunters from Forest Hill. All of them glance around uncertainly, clutching weapons that seem entirely unsuitable for fighting against demons. For a brief instant, I think about gathering the young mages I'd begun to train, but quickly dismiss the idea. They don't know how to cast any useful spells, and I don't want to risk burning them out. Not again. The civilians continue up the road as Owen organizes us into ranks, placing the desert spears in front and the bow-wielding farmers in the back.
"Zara," he says, unslinging his own makeshift bow, "are you well enough to channel?"
"Yes,"
I reply quickly.
"Good. Help out in any way you can. Burn the miserable dogs if they venture too close."
I nod, pulling my talisman from around my neck and positioning myself behind the other warriors. In the west, coming from the direction of the Emberwood, more than a dozen black figures race toward us on all fours, emitting a chorus of blood-curdling howls. They bound over the hills, specks on the horizon that grow into shapes I'm all too familiar with. Black, wolf-like bodies, razor-sharp claws, red eyes blazing like the hells themselves.
"Start shooting when they come in range," Owen says, knocking an arrow and pulling to his cheek. "They're tough, but they die just like anything else."
The others silently follow his lead.
Bowstrings snap as the archers loot, lobbing arrows over the heads of the spearmen and at the charging demons. The hunters, accustomed to shooting animals, pierce the dark hounds with pinpoint accuracy, sending several of them tumbling in the grass, wounded. The greater number, however, continue forward unabated, their teeth bared as they descend on the waiting spears. Filling myself with source energy, I utter the words of power just as the melee begins, mage fire forming in my palms with a shimmering display of light. A farmer and a wastelander go down immediately, their unarmored flesh ripped open by snapping demon jaws. Owen, throwing down his bow, leaps forward with his quill dagger brandished and engages the beasts behind the spearmen, fighting desperately to keep the dark hounds at bay. I hurl my mage fire and quickly conjure more, the magical flames engulfing the monsters in brilliant flashes of blue. Owen moves like a whirlwind, weaving among the demons and forcing them back with his manticore blade. His presence grants the defenders courage, and they fight like demons themselves, pushing forward even as some of their comrades are picked off. The first wave is repelled, but more come from the distant hills, howling and snarling as they make their way toward our position.
"I mark six," Owen calls, glancing back.
I repeat his words in the language of the Wastelanders, informing them of the new number we face. Several of the beasts lie dead at our feet, while the others back away, licking their wounds with impossibly long tongues. We outnumber them, but they manage to kill more of us than we did of them, our blood mingling with theirs on the muddy road.
"You could end this," a voice within me whispers. "Don't limit yourself. You have the ability to channel more source energy than most. Use your full power." Deep down, I know that I should ignore the voice,
Just a few days ago I came dangerously close to destroying myself, and I still haven't fully recovered from using too much magic. If I push my limits, I could risk doing that again. But people are dying, I observe, staring at a youth whose stomach is ripped open, his entrails laid bare. I can't just stand by and let that happen. Ignoring my sense of caution, I seize upon the source energy and begin to draw, filling myself with the radiating power that makes my body burn from within. It invigorates me, electrifying my skin as the magic courses through my bloodstream.
Fos laser, I utter,
conjuring a ball of mage fire. Instead of throwing it, I pour more power into it, causing it to grow to an immense size.
Get behind me,
I growl through clenched teeth, trying desperately to control the vast amount of energy at my fingertips. In my peripheral vision, I can see that the Dark Hounds are almost upon us.
Behind you? Owen asks incredulously.
I nod swiftly, but cannot break concentration enough to respond. Reluctantly, he ushers the bloodied defenders to gather behind me. Just as the Dark Hounds are about to lunge at us, I release the spell, spraying the mage fire out into a wide cone in front of me. The power drains out of my body, and for a moment I feel like I might black out. There is a loud whoosh and a sound of shrieking demons as the air around us shimmers from the intense heat.
Keep channeling,
I think, forcing every drop of source energy into my spell.
Must protect.
After a minute, it's all over. My power runs out, and silence fills the rolling plains. Blinking against the dizziness and the blinding light of the mage fire, I can see that a wide stretch of the grassland has been burned, the ground black and smoldering. The Dark Hounds who'd been about to slaughter us have all been fried, their bodies little more than smoking husks.
11 hells, Owen breathes behind me. You obliterated them, Zara.
I turn to look at him, smiling weakly, then drop to my knees, exhaustion nearly overcoming me. I'm all right, I say, as he rushes up to help me. I just need a minute to compose myself.
Zara, you're hurt, Owen says, voice brimming with concern. You push yourself too hard. You're going to burn yourself out casting spells like that.
I said I'm all right, I snap, brushing a lock of hair out of my face. My head is pounding, but I manage to fix him with an indignant glare. The defenders shuffle away awkwardly, their eyes lingering over the scorched earth. Owen throws up his hands and sighs.
More will come, he says after a moment, sheathing his blade but remaining by my side. We should be gone when they do. What of the dead? A farmer asks, gesturing at one of the human corpses beside him. Leave them, he replies grimly. We can't afford to linger. The presence of these demons means the R'lar army is on the move. We'll all be dead if their vanguard catches up to us.
The farmer nods but doesn't object, looking sadly at his fallen comrade. Owen turns his attention back to me.
You've been reckless lately. I'm worried about you.
I wave a dismissive hand at him, forcing nonchalance. I'll be fine, I promise. I'm a mage, not a child. Let's just be glad that for now the Dark Hounds have been dealt with.
He eyes me for a long moment, then grunts. Come on then, he says, offering his arm for support. You're riding in a wagon for the rest of the day. And no arguing.
I roll my eyes at him but accept his arm, grateful for his strength as we begin our long walk back to the caravan.